Welcome on this Tuesday morning. Justin Blackwell in for Evan Bray. A little Lynyrd Skynyrd to get your Tuesday going. Evan's back in the chair on a Monday as we get you all set for 2026. Brent Loke's in on Friday. If you want to get in on the conversation, 1-877-332-8255. Earlier in the show, we had a good conversation with Amanda Hoover as we talked about AI in the music industry and how that's becoming. We're seeing more of that as the days progress. And I mentioned how I'm on the fence when it comes to artificial intelligence. Still a little creepy when it comes to me. And Telly on the text line shares. And we talked, we asked the question, if you would listen to AI-generated music, you might not even know it's AI-generated, but would you listen to AI-generated music? And Telly texts in, if it's good music or unique, I don't care where it comes from. It forces these artists to pick up their skill. And Telly mentions, and I love this, it's revenge for when I had to pay $25 for a CD in the 90s that had one good song. We can all relate to those days, all us Gen Xers. I'm guilty for it too. You heard a song from a movie, perhaps, and you really wanted that song. But the days of singles wasn't really around. So you found that song on the CD. And you got, I have other songs have to be good too. No, it's just the one. And yeah, you pay $25 for your CD. And just for that one song, I have a lot of those sitting in the basement. Might be fun to pull them out and have a look back down memory lane. 1-877-332-8255 is the number if you want to get in on the conversation. Well, 2025, of course, was a big year in the world of politics. Tom Korski is the managing editor of BlackLock's Reporter. You hear him a lot on this program. And he spoke earlier with Evan as they checked in one last time before 2025 comes to a close to recap this year's top political stories and what developments that Tom's keeping an eye on for 2026.
Let's start with the conservative MPs resigning or crossing the floor. We've had a bit of a flurry of these. Michael Ma, of course, the latest last week. What do you attribute this to?
A failure. That's what happens when you lose four elections in a row. Everybody gets upset. There's a lot of egos in the business. And people cannot see a certain future. And on top of that is the context is the Parliament is almost exactly where it was a year ago, Evan. It's in gridlock, and they're spending too much, and no one's really in charge, and the future's uncertain. I don't think there's any play on the leadership here. The Conservative Party, as you know, is mandated to have a review after an unsuccessful election. I think the next review they have this winter is going to be basically a reunion. But I also think there's a highly entertaining naivete by some of my friends in the press gallery who think the cabinet, through connivance, can get a majority that was denied them by the voters in their wisdom. If they ever, I mean, they need another two to get a working majority. If that happened, I mean, people are going to be burning police cars. I think the probability of an election went up in 2026 with the latest floor crossing, my two cents.
That was going to be one of my questions. Let me play this five-second clip. This was Minister Tim Hodgson on Will There Be More? This is what he said.
Let's say I'm getting lots of inquiries.
So is an answer like that fanning the flames, or is that him trying to skirt away from the issue? Do you have thoughts on that, Tom?
Well, I think it's self-serving, and everyone respects self-interest. Everyone's got it in politics and in hockey. And I also think Minister Hodgson is politically inexperienced. When a leader is in trouble, we're talking about Pierre Poilievre and the Conservative Party, what happens is exactly what happened last time. Senator Denise Batters, an active member of caucus, walks out and says, "Well, I can't believe O'Toole lost a trust election to Justin Trudeau. Time to go. Now you know you're in the business." That hasn't happened this time. So the needling by opponents is no one faults them. They see advantage in it. I don't think that's the problem that Parliament has right now. But there's no doubt about it. Winning is better than losing, and losing is hard four times in a row.
You know, Pierre Poilievre's done a few interviews recently where he talks openly about heading into this leadership review coming up in about a month. He's saying, "Yep, I'm still there. I'm still the guy." Do you expect to see anything interesting, different, change or come out of that in a month from now?
I don't, and I think only Westerners really understand the nuance of this. It's really the Reform Party. It took them 40 years, and by increments, the old-time reformers, and Poilievre was of the youngest generation of that tide, now control that party, and by increments and step by step, they've done it. Mm-hmm. What I think a lot of the detractors or political uninformed commentators don't get is, it is a Reform Party. It's a Poilievre Party. And there would be no purpose in getting rid of Poilievre because they are like-minded. Inside his caucus, he is a popular guy. Evan, when you listen to some of the outsiders, I'm sure Minister Hodgson would say, Poilievre, too competitive, too divisive. You know what reformers say when you talk to them? They said, we should have gone harder on immigration. We might have won more seats in the cities. I mean, we're a divided country mm-hmm. by honestly held views among communities of interest. And Poilievre represents a community of interest. You're not going to get rid of that, even if they got rid of him, and I don't think they will.
Tom Korski is my guest, managing editor for Blackhawks Reporter. I was on your website first thing this morning. Usually it's one of my scans, my reviews, and I caught your story around the Canada Revenue Agency. Trust us is no longer good enough, says a judge.
You know, taxpayers don't have a lot of friends in Ottawa, but they have some. And one of them is a federal court of appeals judge named David Stratus. This is an interesting case, but anyone can relate to it. It was a taxpayer, it's a small company, a software company, and it missed its deadline to claim a legitimate refund. And the Canada Revenue Agency said, drop dead. So the company appealed, and they went to the federal court, lower court last year, and they lost. And they appealed again, and they got Judge Stratus, and they got lucky. And he wrote, for a federal judge, a surprisingly evocative and strong language, where he struck down the Canada Revenue Agency's conclusion because they didn't explain themselves. You can see this ruling is just boiling with indignation, where the judge says, we live in an era of widespread skepticism, cynicism, and mistrust of government. You don't get to stand there and say, trust me, I'm not taking any more questions. You have to explain yourself, especially when you're in the tax business and there's money at stake. What did the judge say? I quote him accurately. This is no small thing, end of quote. Evan, you're a taxpayer. You take your roses where you can. This was a good one.
Well, the CRA's had a bit of a rough year. Of course, we found out they were operating at 17% accuracy when it came to calls into the call center, and now this. So I don't know if we'll see a turnaround in 2026, but certainly they seem to be in the crosshairs, Tom.
Oh, their problem has been, I don't want to. Actually, I've never hesitated to name names. One, their chief commissioner is a man named Bob Hamill. He came over years ago from the Department of Finance. All the car wrecks that have happened at the Canada Revenue Agency were not due to indifferent and frequently changing ministers. It was Commissioner Hamilton, in my opinion. The multiple failed audits, not answering the phone at the call center, giving bad advice and not being liable for taxpayers' subsequent losses. That's all on Bob. Great news. Bob Hamilton's retiring in June. Thank you. Thanks for the memories,
Thank
Bob.
You for your service. Last time you and I chatted, Tom, was just before the federal budget came down. And we talked a bit about, you know, what it looked like that deficit was going to be and what that does to the overall debt. Now I read on Blacklock's this morning that they're asking for an increase in the national debt ceiling. They need more room to accumulate debt.
And people in the know are very upset by this, including members of the Senate National Finance Committee and now the Budget Office, who've said, well, wait a minute. They have increased the debt ceiling by over $1 trillion. That's on the level, $1 trillion in the last 5 years. And just now, the Department of Finance wants another increase to over $2.5 trillion, a 20% increase. By the way, a lot of people don't know we have a debt ceiling. What does that mean? That's the limit that cabinet can borrow without having to go back to Parliament and explain yourself. And they were asked about this in Senate National Finance, and one of their managers said, well, no, we don't need that money right now, you see, but who knows, the future is uncertain, which, of course, as senators and now budget analysts point out, entirely defeats the purpose of a debt ceiling. It's supposed to instill some discipline in your borrowing. Otherwise, it's meaningless. They are going to have some trouble getting this through, Evan, but it's also, those are staggering figures. $2.5 trillion, just about the entire value of the entire Canadian economy for an entire year. That's serious money.
Big money for sure. Tom Korski is my guest, managing editor of BlackRock's Reporter. We've got just a couple of minutes left. It was in the spring when, of course, we had the federal election and Mark Carney. The fight seemed to be which leader is best to deal with Trump. Although, you know, there was this little cost of living thing that we'd been focused on before Trump was elected, but that got pushed to the side. Here we are at the end of the year. We don't have a deal. It doesn't look like we're really any steps closer. Thoughts on this, Tom? And you know, is it possible for any leader to be putting us in a better position, or has Mark Carney failed on his promise?
Well, he set an expectation he could not meet. So if he failed, the failure was his and no one else's. But I also think, Evan, that I've had that one surprise with Carney, in particular his office and his cabinet. They are not running the show. They are as casual and as disinterested as some of the previous cabinets that we've had since 2015. You can tell when a minister is running his department because he's not walking out the door at 4:30 in the afternoon. And I have to say, Carney is not putting in the hours to deal with the many vexing problems that he's identified. And whether he sees himself in a performative role or as sort of a chief executive, and I have people who deal with those things, trust me, if the prime minister's not dealing with them, they're not getting dealt with. And we see that more and more and more, especially in parliamentary committees. It's getting a little rough, Evan.
Tom, doing what you do and having done it now for a while, do you remember a year where we had as many political headlines, and I mean bold font headlines, that we had this year? And are you able to pick out one that you would say maybe was the one that stands out above the rest?
It was extraordinary, wasn't it? Well, I mean, the discourse about American annexation, when was the last time that was a topic? 1868, I guess. But, you know, my favorite story of the year in terms of impact, and far-reaching impact, was the collapse of the Green Movement. We were told for the longest time, and this was hundreds of billions that was spent by this, by the feds, that the planet was burning. And we saw the impact on people who believe that. For instance, the leading advocate of that, as you know, famously, Stephen Guilbeault, quit cabinet on the day a policy was announced. That's extraordinary. But it was the complete collapse of that. The Liberal Party is in headlong flight from that. If you want to really promote a level of public cynicism by an informed voter, you would do something like this. So all of that, blood, sweat, and tears for 10 years, we're going to tax carbon. What about the plastic straws, Evan? Mm-hmm. What about the children? And it went one ear and out the other with the advocates of that program. That's epic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 30 seconds or less. What do you see on the horizon for 26? You've already hinted at an election.
I don't see how they avoid it. They're getting on each other's nerves. The very surprisingly little is getting done by cabinet. Bills are getting log-jammed in committee. You and I absolutely predicted that back in May. I don't see how they get out of 2026 without an election. If for no other reason, then they have to go back to the boss, that's the voter, to say, is this what you want? How are we doing? It won't be pretty.
Yeah, okay, Tom. All the best through the holidays. I look forward to checking in with you early 2026.
Happy Christmas to you, Evan, and your whole gang.
That was Tom Korski on with Evan Bray, the managing editor of BlackRock's Reporter, with a bold prediction there at the end of their conversation. An election, he figures, is coming. He doesn't see how it won't happen. in 2026. What do you think? Are you up for another election next year? Give me a text, 1-877-332-8255. I'm Justin Blackwell, in for Evan Bray on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Welcome on this Tuesday morning. Justin Blackwell in for Evan Bray once again. And we continue to follow the breaking news up north as RCMP are dealing with the dangerous person alert for the Big Island Cree Nation and the surrounding area. That's near Pierceland by the Alberta border. They continue to tell people to lock their doors and find a safe space. And now it's because of two dangerous people, police are saying, with a gun in the area. The RCMP responding and saying the suspects were last seen on an ATV on Big Island Lake Cree Nation. We'll have much more for you throughout the morning and into the afternoon as we continue to follow this developing story. Well, we just heard from Tom Korski, the managing editor of Blacklock's Reporter, before the break, looking into the top stories on Parliament Hill from this past year and also with a bold prediction when it comes to 2026. He figures we are in for a federal election. And on the text line at 1-877-332-8255, Marion in Regina is talking about politics as a whole in 2025, and we're talking New Year's resolutions as well. And for Marion, how about resolving to speak up against the corruption in our democracy? MPs across the floor to join a different political party from the one to which they were elected. We've seen a couple of those jumping from the Conservatives over to the Liberals. And Marion says, either vacate your seat and trigger a by-election or sit as an independent. 1-877-332-8255. We're also talking artificial intelligence today. After earlier, we spoke with Amanda Hoover with Business Insider as she was specifically targeting the music industry and what impacts AI-generated music are having on that industry. We're seeing one song that was topping a Billboard chart. And as I've been saying, I'm on the fence with AI. Not sure. It's all creepy to me, especially all the stuff you see on social media. Lesson Corning, AI is going to destroy the movie and music industry. Thousands of jobs are going to be gone. And if you're watching Monday Night Football yesterday, there were a couple of commercials that were all AI generated. I believe one was a Crest commercial, and you could tell it was AI, but just creepy. Not fully on board yet. I might get there, but we'll have to wait and see. Not sure yet. 1-877-332-8255. I'm Justin Blackwell in for Evan Bray. Coming up after the break, we're going to hear from a local author who just penned a new book, The Sleepover, a clever twist on the story. That's coming up on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Well, I can't help but be scared of it all sometimes. And the rain's going to wash away, I believe. Welcome on this Tuesday morning. Justin Blackwell in for Evan Bray. And we continue to follow the breaking news that is happening in our province this hour. New information out from RCMP on the dangerous person alert up north for the Big Island Cree Nation. That's near Pierceland by the Alberta border. RCMP out with the release not that long ago, telling us that one person, in fact, is dead. Three additional people have been hurt, and the suspects are still out there. Two dangerous people with a gun in the area, police are saying. They're asking people to lock their doors, find a safe space. The RCMP say the suspects were last seen on an ATV on Big Island Cree Nation. Seven healthcare facilities in the area under lockdown. The First Nation remains under lockdown. The province, with the release, also saying thoughts are with the community and all affected and thanking the efforts of first responders. Now, the call to RCMP came in at about 6 o'clock this morning with a report of that shooting. And then just before, I think it was about 9 o'clock is when we got that first release about the dangerous persons alert. So this situation continues to evolve throughout the hour, a developing story, and we will keep you updated as more information comes in. Well, we have been talking sports today, artificial intelligence, politics, always making an appearance on the Evan Bray Show. We're going to switch gears a bit now and talk bedtime stories. Aaron Wignis is a local author here in Saskatchewan, just penned the new book, The Sleepover. It puts a clever twist on the story. And while your little ones follow along with the bright illustrations, parents may catch a silly innuendo or two that are strategically put into the rhymes that the kids won't understand. And Aaron joins me now this morning. Aaron, thanks so much for taking our call today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. How was Christmas for you and the family?
Fantastic. Busy time of year in our house.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I bet a few kids got your book of The Sleepover for a Christmas present this year. First off, so how did you get into writing kids' books?
You know, this is my first kids' book that I wrote. And honestly, I didn't intend on starting to write kids' books. I kind of just had wrote it, and some of my wife's friends read it and thought that maybe, you know, it should be published, I guess. And so here's where we're at.
So we are talking about the book, The Sleepover. What is this story about?
Well, The Sleepover is about the kids going to Grandma and Grandpa's for a sleepover, and what happens with Mom and Dad for the remainder of the night, and the night out of the town, and so on and so forth.
And is this all based on personal experiences?
I think it's based on personal experiences from a lot of parents. I think there's a lot of parents out there that could probably relate to it. And, you know, we get very little time, you know, for ourselves again when we have children. So, you know, shipping them off to the grandparents for a night, I think, is healthy for all relationships. And this is kind of what the book touches on.
So what inspired you to write a children's book that gives, you know, kids one story and parents a completely different one?
Well, I'm not sure that it was really thought of ahead of time at all. I really just wrote it, and that's kind of what it turned out to be. They call it a double entendre, I guess, a new term for me, you know, and both the parents can enjoy it as long and the kids as well. So the words are kind of describing one thing, and the pictures are, you know, saying something else to the kids, and in the end, everyone gets a chuckle out of it.
Speaking with Aaron Wignis, the author of The Sleepover, and I mentioned at the start, you know, you put a clever twist on the story. The little ones, you know, follow along with the bright illustrations. Parents may catch a silly innuendo or two woven into the rhymes that kids might not understand. Can you give us an example of a line or idea in the story where it might mean one thing for kids but something else for the parents?
Well, to be honest, the book all the way through is really meaning one thing to the parents, and the kids are, you know, kind of seeing another thing throughout the pictures. So the whole book is written in that way, and not necessarily just kind of one line or one page. So pick it up and have a read, and you will understand and probably have a laugh and read it again.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did you strike that balance between being family-friendly for the kids, but still, I guess, secretly hilarious for the adults?
Yeah, I guess just the creative side. I have, you know, again, I just wrote it. This is the way it kind of came across, and I had no intent to write it that way. And it was more after I had wrote it, I was like, well, how do I bring this back so that the kids could enjoy it as well? So we started AI generating a bunch of images, and yeah, it just came together in this way that it's a so-called double entendre, and that, you know, everyone could kind of enjoy it.
Speaking with Aaron Wignis, author of The Sleepover, what kind of reaction have you got from parents and the kids that have read the book?
Well, I think it was the reaction certainly from the parents. You know, the kids are still clueless, I guess, what, you know, the story is about. So parents are getting a good chuckle out of it. They get to the end and they're like, are my kids going to understand this? And, you know, they're not. Don't worry. read away.
Now, did your own kids unknowingly help shape any of the scenes or jokes in the book?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think just any parent's experience, like I said before, they will relate to it. And so certainly my experience as a dad is what led me to, you know, write the book. And it was never like, I'm going to write children's book. I just sat down and wrote something one day and it turned out to be a book. And, you know, and I guess this one turned out pretty well. So I started to write a second one and it's going to be published in January here as well. So.
You know, I was going to mention, so yeah, more books in the future. Obviously, you said you got a one on the works. Any more after that?
Probably, yeah. I have three kids, so I guess I better get three books done anyways. But, you know, the second one is about my middle child, and it's called Dominic the Destroyer of All Things. You know, written in a similar rhyming pattern as the first book, not with the innuendos, however, that the first book portrays. So a little bit more kid-friendly in the second book, and definitely not a double entendre like the first one. So,
speaking with Aaron Wignes, the author of The Sleepover, what do you hope parents and kids take away from the story, Aaron?
Just to get a laugh, it's all good. You know, I never wrote it to be some sort of children's author or anything like that. More or less just having fun one day. And if everyone can get a laugh out of it a few times, then yeah, I think it's kind of coming across as a pretty cool book.
Perfect, Aaron. Thank you so much for your time. Look forward to reading the book and getting a good laugh and sharing it with my kids and my wife. All the best in the new year, and we'll chat again soon.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can find it on Amazon. Go check it out.
Yeah, sounds like a good read from Aaron Wignes. The Sleepover is the name of the book. And if you have kids, might be a good read for your little ones. And parents might also get a good laugh, too. We're going to take a quick break, and then coming up, Brittany Cafe is going to join us. You hear a lot on this radio station, Saskatchewan Stories. So many great stories from this past year. We're going to check in with her on some of her favorite stories from 2025 and a look ahead to what we can expect in 2026. I'm Justin Blackwell, filling in for Evan Bray here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Hey, welcome on this Tuesday morning. Justin Blackwell in for Evan Bray. Carly Rae Jepsen is on your music playlist. Well, you're having a good Tuesday. I'm joined now by Brittany Cafe. You hear her on this radio station a lot. The author of Saskatchewan Stories. Brittany?
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a really good past week. Kind of a crazy week in our household.
Oh, I know, right? Well, of course, Christmas was just had in every household. And with your young ones, you guys had a special treat this Christmas, didn't you?
Yeah, a very special visitor, aside from Santa Claus, of course. Grey Cup champion Logan Ferland brought the Grey Cup to my house on Saturday morning. And my kids ate chips out of it for breakfast. So it was a really, really cool morning in the cafe household.
Perfect food to eat out of the Grey Cup.
Right?
And you have a special bond with the Riders. You did so many stories this year. How did that bond come to be?
Yeah, so it all kind of started with a story I did last January about the Rider Reading Program, which is where the team sends players into schools to teach kids about the importance of reading. Even when you're a football player, you have to know how to read, apparently. So I went with Jorgen Hughes and Logan Ferland to one of the schools in Martinsville, and Logan and I kind of hit it off there. Then my little guy Henry was chosen to be the Jim Pattison Children's Hospital Foundation ambassador with the Riders Foundation. And Logan, luckily, was one of the guys that we got to work with. And through that, I learned a little bit about Logan's story. When he was born, he was actually in the NICU. He was only 2 pounds, 7 ounces when he was born. Mm-hmm. And I kind of started to form a bond with his mom, Kathy. And I did a story about her for Mother's Day. So big Logan Ferland was once this tiny little NICU baby. So it was really cool to get to kind of show that side of this really talented athlete. And then, you know, you tell a few really nice stories about a guy and he brings the Grey Cup to your house.
Absolutely. Brittany Cafe, author of Saskatchewan Stories, joining me this morning as we look back on the year on her great stories. And you did everything this past year. I mean, you were out hunting, you shot some guns. I think you flew a float plane. Did you not?
It has been one of the most insane years of my life. And I was trying to sit down and like set some goals for 2026. And I'm like, how am I going to top this year? Mm-hmm. I feel like I did everything with hunting. I actually went with an outfitter near Leoville, my hometown, named Devin Beebe. I went goose hunting. I was too chicken to try and actually shoot a bird. So I just hung out in the blind with all of these different hunters for that. But once we went back to the cabin, I shot skeet and I did hit two in a row. I was very proud of that. I sent video to all of my hunting buddies to brag about how awesome I am. I did crop it though, so it was only when I actually got them that they got to see all of the misses. Or that's just for me. It was a really cool experience. And then I actually got to go back to a different outfitting camp to talk to an American hunter in November who has been coming here for like the last decade. He comes all the way from Wyoming to Saskatchewan to hunt every year. And it's not really something that I've understood the appeal of until actually getting to go out and experience it. It was really cool.
How do you come up with your story ideas?
It is the most random process. I think people think I'm lying when I'm like, I literally sit around and think, I wonder if there's anyone in Saskatchewan who does this, like making lace. I did a feature on a lady named Ula Nielsen last year who makes lace. And that was just a random thought of, I wonder if there's anyone who does that here. A quick Google led me to the Canadian Lace Making Gazette. I sent them an email and asked if there was anyone in Saskatoon. And lo and behold, there was one, Ula, and they connected me with her. So most of my stories come about like that. It's just a very random idea that I come up with and then look into. Also, I do now and then, someone will mention another story idea when I'm doing an interview. So I did an interview with Dylan and Lon Cola from Reroot, who recycle all different types of things in the city. And Dylan mentioned that he had heard about this guitar making course that some guy in Tegaskee, Saskatchewan held. So I did a quick Google, found out about David Freeman with Timeless Instruments, and was able to go out and spend a day with him in his studio and learn how he makes guitars and teaches other people how to make guitars. So a lot of word of mouth, a lot of just talking to people, which is my dream job.
Really. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I'm speaking with the Brittany Cafe, author of Saskatchewan Stories. A favorite story from 2025?
Oh my gosh. This is a tough one because I genuinely feel like every single story I write, I'm like, this is the best one. I've topped myself every single time, which is a pretty good way to feel. One of my favorite ones this year, I think, has to be the Turtle Lake Monster.
Yeah.
And that
was so good.
Again, that was just me thinking, like, I wonder if there's any cryptids in Saskatchewan, like Bigfoot, anything like that. And I found this Facebook page called the Turtle Lake Monster, run by this guy named Robert Gross, who claimed that he and his brother Dave saw the Turtle Lake Monster back in the 70s. So I got a hold of Robert, who lives in Saskatoon, and we set a time for the two of us, along with his brother Dave, who is actually from BC. So we timed this for when Dave would be down for us to all go to Turtle Lake together and search for the monster again. And it was so much fun. I got to have like be so creative writing that and putting it together. So that was a top one for me.
And quickly, before we let you go, what can we expect in 2026?
Well, I did just release the story ahead of Christmas on Rise Air's Santa in the North program.
Oh, great story, yeah.
It's been going for 25 years. They bring Santa to all of these different communities in northern Saskatchewan. And Uranium City is where I went. While we were there hanging out in the school, I was chatting with this guy named Dean, who is the former mayor of Uranium City. He had lived there since he was two. He just moved to LaRonge, but he was there in 82 when the mine shut down and everything changed in Uranium City. And I asked him as we were sitting there, do you think you could take me to the abandoned high school? Candu High School was built in 1979 and it closed its doors permanently in 1983. It has sat completely abandoned ever since. And Dean, in the dark of the night, brought me into Candu High School. It was incredible. Mm-hmm. Something that whoever imagines that they're going to be wandering around in the dark with a strange man
in Uranium City.
But again, another thing on my bucket list. Mm-hmm. That story is going to be coming out later next week, and I cannot wait for you all to hear it.
All right, Brittany. Well, thanks so much for this. And if you want to check out all of Brittany's stories, you can head over to CKOM.com and CJME.com. Check all the stories. Some great pictures, some great video. So cool.
Yeah. And if you have a story idea, if you have someone that you're like, Brittany really needs to talk to this person or go to this place, send me an email. If you just go to CKOM or CGME.com, there's a Saskatchewan Stories tab. You'll find all my info and my email there. Reach out. I'd love to hear from you.
Brittany, thanks so much for this.
Anytime.
You're listening to The Evan Bray Show. I'm Justin Blackwell here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.